Priority 1 message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
You are listening to the Trek Ranks Podcast, a member of the Tricorder Transmissions Podcast Network. This is episode 23, featuring the top five series engineers. Welcome, Star Trek fans. I am Jim Morehouse, and I am the host of the Trek Ranks Podcast. And tonight, we're getting our hands dirty. Well, not really dirty, because Star Trek engineers aren't exactly knee-deep in elbow grease, but whatever. We're gonna open up the dilithium chamber, and we're going to run a full diagnostic on our top five Star Trek series engineers. So tonight's show is a little bit of a format change for us. We're doing one of our finite topics, where there's literally only five possible choices when you're ranking your top five Star Trek engineers. So we'll run through exactly how we're going to do that with our diagnostic cycle in a few minutes. But first, let's introduce our great guest tonight for tonight's show, both coming to us via subspace transmission from the Euro Quadrant. First up is a guest we've been trying to get on for quite a long time. He finally made it work this week. He's making his Trek Ranks debut, but he's got his own podcast over on Trek FM called Primitive Culture. Great listen if you haven't checked it out. It's pretty cerebral, and I really like that angle of it. He is Duncan Barrett. Welcome, Duncan.
Thank you, Jim. It's good to finally be able to make things work out. I hope it's not too cerebral, because I know that didn't work out very well for the cage. But, you know, maybe we'll be relaunched in a few months' time with a bit more fisticuffs.
I should have said cerebral and fun. Both of those things. I love
them. Oh, good. Well, that's what we aim for.
And our second guest tonight is making her second Trek Ranks appearance. And she's one of the most prolific and smartest Trekkies we know, especially on Twitter, where she's always going to the next level with her deep cut Trek references. It's Sam Darrow from the Trekkie Girls. Welcome back, Sam.
Hi, Jim. Thank you so much for having me back. That was a very generous introduction there. Thank you.
Well, I'm fired up to have you guys both back. This is going to be great. So Duncan, whenever we have a guest on for the first time, I like to kind of dig in a little bit and figure out what your Trek backstory is. So how and when did you get into Trek? And I always ask, are you a completist? Have you seen it all? So what's your backstory?
Yeah, I have seen it all. I have to say, only relatively recently did I watch the animated series. Actually, as part of for the anniversary over at Trek FM, we had this thing called From There to Here, which was a daily podcast sort of going through every episode. So that was my kind of prompt to finally get around to getting my head around the animated series, which I really enjoyed, but I hadn't looked at before. In terms of my own kind of Star Trek journey, as it were, I grew up, I guess I was kind of vaguely aware of Star Trek growing up as a kind of younger kid. I remember, I think probably The Devil in the Dark must have been the first episode that I ever saw, but it didn't exactly make a kind of lasting impact on me. And then I guess when I was kind of maybe about sort of 11, 12, that kind of age, I was on holiday in Dublin staying with relatives there, and they had satellite TV, which meant they were getting all the new next-gen episodes. And during the course of that holiday, I kind of got I got a taste for next-gen, basically, through staying with them and, you know, watching Star Trek with them, and they had a few on tape that I watched. And then not that long afterwards, I was off school for a period of time with glandular fever, or mono, I think you call it in the States. So I was off school for a couple of months, really, and basically just completely wiped out. Essentially just staying in bed, totally exhausted, not really even up to reading or anything. But my local Blockbuster video store had the whole of The Next Generation on these old VHS tapes. You get four episodes per tape. And so every couple of days, I get my mum to go down to the Blockbuster store and get the next gen video. So I kind of worked my way through next gen then in time to, I guess I must have caught up, and I think it was probably DS9 was starting around that time. So sort of from then on, DS9 and Voyager, I kind of watched, you know, as we were getting them, I was watching them again on VHS tapes and tapes, you know, sometimes posted from Dublin from my relatives over there. But basically watched those, you know, as they were pretty much as they were coming out.
You guys were getting them a few years later, right, than the US.
There was definitely a bit of a delay. But, I mean, it depended. Yeah. You see, if you had satellite, if you had Sky TV, you could get them a lot sooner. If you were waiting for the BBC, then you'd kind of be waiting forever in a way. But I actually spent a terrifying amount of money, I think, in my teenage years on, you know, buying the VHS tapes. And they would have in Star Trek Monthly magazine, they'd always tell you, you know, which tapes were coming out that month and have little reviews. And then I'd, you know, go off and shell out whatever it was, you know, 12 quid for those two episodes or something. I mean, it kind of puts into perspective people, you know, complaining about having to pay for CBS All Access or whatever. You know, not that we have to do that over here in the UK, but yeah, it was an expensive hobby in those days.
Sam, were you going to say something?
Oh, no, I was just saying that, you know, we still are waiting for some episodes.
Probably, yeah. Well, there's those ones that the BBC banned and you know, wouldn't show, I guess.
That's rough. I don't know how I would have done that. So, all right. So let's run through our quick Trek Ranks recalibration and jump into tonight's topic. So first up, as regular listeners will know by now, general order number one here at the Trek Ranks podcast is that we love Trek and we love to rank Trek via some deep dive topics to really just get the conversation started. And I think, as most people know, my favorite thing to do is to talk about Star Trek. So that's pretty much why this podcast exists. So hopefully when you listen to the show, you have some fun with it and maybe think about a few episodes or ideas that you haven't thought about for a while. And nothing would make me happier than hearing about someone going back to watch some old episodes because of this conversation we're about to have. And as our good friend, the Vulcan Master, likes to remind us each week, the main driver for all of our discussions here at the Trek Ranks podcast is...
infinite diversity.
In infinite combinations.
No wrong answers. That's right, Vulcan Master. It's not about being right or definitive in any way. It's just about sharing the things that we love about Star Trek. So anyway, we love all Trek here, from TOS to TNG, straight through to Enterprise and the Kelvin timeline, and now Discovery as well. So it's all fair game on the Trek Mains podcast. And remember that we use episodes as our shorthand lingo, but the 13 films are always in play too. All right, so before we jump into our level one diagnostic, let's quickly power up the Argus array so everyone knows exactly how they can hail us.
Hailing frequencies are open.
For Trek Ranks, as you might expect, you can reach us on the World Wide Web at trekranks.com and at the tricordertransmissions.com. And if you'd like to leave us a message with your own picks, you can do that at 609-512-LLAP. That's 609-512-5527. You can also find the Tricorder Transmissions on Facebook. And for those of you enjoying all of our shows here at the Tricorder Transmissions Podcast Network, including Shore Leave, Disco Trek, Politrex, Drawing Trek, Reading Trek, I'm sure I didn't get them all. You can support the network by becoming a Patreon of our shows at patreon.com/the Tricorder Transmissions. And we appreciate the support and all the interaction that we have with our listeners. So, and in regards to that interaction, you can reach me on Twitter at TrekRanks and also at Enterprise Extra. So please reach out to me anytime. I love to hear from you guys. And as I say every week, the show is better when we're hearing from you. All right. So to wrap all that up, Duncan and Sam, would you like to tell everybody how they can get a hold of you? Duncan?
Sure. If you're on Twitter, you can find me on Twitter at Barrett's Books. That's B-A-R-R-E-T-T, just like Major Barrett. If you are interested in Star Trek podcasts, you can find me, obviously, on Primitive Culture, the Trek FM network. And if you do want to listen to that, we have a Facebook group called the Babel Conference, where you can come and find me to chat about anything we've been talking about over there.
And how about you, Sam, the Trekkie girls?
Right, yeah, you can find the Trekkie Girls at trekkiegirls.com or on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Trekkie Girls. We're everywhere as well. We're like Captain Kirk and a green girl. We're all over the place.
I love it. All right, I think we're now ready to activate our level one diagnostic to get into today's show.
Diagnostic cycle will be complete in 20 seconds.
So this week's diagnostic cycle is basically just running through exactly how we're going to rank our engineers. So as a starting point, the only engineers eligible for selection are the five lead series engineers that we currently know and love. So that list includes the following. From TOS, Montgomery Scott, James Doohan. And from TNG, Geordi LaForge, played by LeVar Burton. From DS9, Miles Edward O'Brien, the great Cole Meany. From Voyager, B'Elanna Torres, Roxanne Dawson, who directed my episode, by the way. And from Enterprise, Charles Tripp Tucker III, Mr. Connor Trenier. And for good measure, if you are so inclined, if someone chooses Scotty, they're more than welcome to highlight Mr. Simon Pegg as the Kelvin timeline version of Scotty as well. So, but outside of those five, we're not going to include anybody like the likes of Argyle or the inimitable Leland T. Lynch, or sadly, even Paul Stamets, who we love, but isn't really the chief engineer of Discovery. It hasn't really been established yet. A little nebulous. If any of our panelists decide to break the rules on that, we love it, because at Trek Ranks, we love encourage rule breaking. So after saying all that, who really cares? All right. So now that we have that definition of our selection canvas out of the way, let's break down exactly how we're going to go through each round. And we'll do that in our prime directives.
I do not concur with your captain's decision.
She's following our prime directive.
Define prime directive.
So this week's the prime directive is really the meat of our show. This is where the real discussion is going to take place before we quickly reveal our final ranks in the order of things. So to start, we're going to go through each character round, and we're going to start with TOS and then work our way through to Enterprise. And for each of these rounds, we're all going to pick one episode to represent the character being discussed, and then we'll each talk about something we love about that character, and we'll talk about how we view that character. And of course, we'll add in our five words and a hashtag to make it a true Trek Ranks topic. So before we get into that, I want to ask you guys, before we kind of jump into it, were there any specific criteria that jumped out at you to kind of lead your prime directive, Sam?
I started off, and this happened to me last time I was on Trek Ranks. I think when you give me these subjects, I'm like, yeah, I know exactly what five, you know. And then I realized I don't at all know which five. So I know which one's my favorite. I'm like, yeah, I know who my favorite engineer is. No doubt in my mind, that's number one. And then who's going to be second, third, fourth, and fifth? Like, they're all on equal footing. They're all exceptional engineers. So I did have to give myself some criteria. And as there's an episode that goes with it, I thought, I'm going to find episodes that really demonstrate how excellent that engineer is. Who's the most resourceful, rather than who had the most ample nacelles, who excelled in their job. So I kind of went with that. And as I kind of went through each engineer, the order kind of sorted itself out. And it surprised me. I was surprised. Okay. And a little bit disgusted and a little bit...
The key to this ranking is that just because someone's number five doesn't mean we don't love them. We still love them.
I know, but it doesn't feel like that, does it?
He's still top five. That's awesome to be top five. All right. How about you, Duncan? Any specific criteria?
Well, I found some of the same issues, really. I have to say my favorite of these five engineers, the episode that I've chosen for that person, is actually my least favorite of these five episodes. So when I was looking at it, I think it sounds like a little bit like Sam. I sort of felt thinking about some of these characters, particularly, you know, the ones that are really my favorite of the characters. Often the episodes that feature them heavily are not really about them doing their job. They might be about some kind of personal story. They might be about something that kind of takes them away from their kind of engineering work. And I sort of felt, for the sake of this discussion, for the sake of this ranking, that I ought to at least find episodes to look at where the engineers were doing engineering of some kind or another. So I wasn't necessarily saying which is the episode where they're doing the best engineering that they could, but I sort of felt it was important that they were doing their job, and they were doing a decent job of it, and that it wasn't just, you know, something that happened to them in a kind of domestic setting or whatever. So that was kind of my main criteria. And as I say, it kind of surprised me a bit, because I found that quite helpful in some ways in terms of narrowing things down. But it did mean that my rankings came out slightly differently to how they probably would have if I'd literally just been picking my favorite episode for each of those characters.
Yeah, that is, we're all on the same page, because I picked quite a few episodes where the engineer wasn't necessarily the focus of the story, but was doing something resourceful or something that kind of played to their traits and their personality. Most of them are that way. One of them is a distinct story about that engineer, and they're not doing much engineering. So, okay, mm-hmm. This is going to be fascinating to see how we all went through this. So let's kick off our actual Prime Directive right now with round one and Montgomery Scott, or as Jayla likes to say, Montgomery Scotty, everyone's favorite miracle worker. So Duncan, we'll start with you and then go with Sam. So Duncan, what's your Montgomery Scott pick?
Okay, so I was glad to hear you say that that the films are allowed as choices, because I wasn't sure whether I was kind of cheating a little bit by going for one of the films. But I guess when I thought about Scotty, I mean, there are Scotty episodes in the original series, but the one that immediately sprang to mind, certainly I wasn't going to choose. I won't go into that since this is Trek Ranks and we stay positive. But I sort of feel like often with original series episodes, there's like little moments from Scotty, but maybe he doesn't necessarily have much of a chance to shine. Whereas somehow in the films, I feel like he came into his own a little bit more as a character. And maybe also for me, you know, growing up more of the kind of TNG generation, I saw those films before I went back and watched the original series. So on one level, that kind of is my Scotty. But anyway, so I went for The Voyage Home. And the reason I went for The Voyage Home is that I think that there's a tendency to use Scotty in the film sometimes for kind of comic relief. I mean, we see that in Star Trek V as well, where maybe it doesn't work so well. But I think in Star Trek IV, the comedy throughout the film is very successful. But James Doohan gives a fantastic comic performance. He has that wonderful scene with the computer, which is kind of iconic. And there's just a real sense of kind of joy about his character, about the performance. It's very funny. It's very joyful and charming. But also, you know, about Scotty himself and something about his kind of the pleasure that he takes in the kind of adventure that they're all on, I think is quite an appealing characteristic. One of the things you asked us to look for was sort of positive qualities about those characters that come, that they're sort of exemplified by these stories. So yeah, that's what I was kind of really seeing in Scotty, in a sense, in that film.
Oh man, I love when the first pick is an episode or a film that I didn't even think of as a consideration, and it's literally the perfect explanation of who Scotty is and his cleverness, his resourcefulness, and you know, he's still cracking some jokes, but not being the brunt.
He's not
being the brunt of the jokes,
exactly,
like he is, unfortunately, no, later on.
Yeah, and you know, he does some pretty hot engineering. He can type out on an ancient computer the formula for transparent aluminium, you know, just like that.
Brilliant. Sam, what's your take on that pick?
Well, ironically, mine's the same.
Wow. Let's do this. I forgot to get your fantastic 5 words and a hashtag, Duncan. What was it?
Oh, sorry. Okay, so my five words and a hashtag are basically along those lines. I should have said before, actually, all my hashtags and all my 5 words are quotations. That was the other rule I imposed on myself. And it started off quite well. And then by the time I got to sort of number 3 or 4, I was thinking, why on earth did I start doing this? But so my 5 words and a hashtag for The Voyage Home are: Admiral, there be whales here. Hashtag hello computer.
Brilliant. All right, so then let's jump into yours, Sam. What's your 5 words and why'd you pick Voyage Home?
Well, it's funny because my hashtag, yours was hello computer, wasn't it? My hashtag is for quaint.
I thought about that one, actually.
I thought about hello computer. And my 5 words, which, you know, I know you'd like rule breaking, so mine's, you know, technically 6, is let's do the time warp again.
Brilliant.
And yeah, I felt exactly the same as Duncan. I went through all the episodes I could think of TOS, and I was going to go with By Any Other Name, just because I love that scene where Scotty drinks Kelvin under the table. But his engineering best definitely comes out in the movies, and the Voyage Home just demonstrates that beautifully. Fixes up a Klingon bird of prey from nothing. He slingshots it around the sun, meddles with the timeline, creates transparent aluminum, and gets the whale. I mean, he just comes into his own in that episode. He saves the day. There's no one other engineer could have done what he did in that episode. So Scotty's an amazing engineer all round.
Perhaps the professor could use your computer. Please.
Computer? Computer. Hello, computer.
Just use the keyboard.
The keyboard. How quaint.
I also felt that one film really highlighted his attributes.
I also love, I couldn't find a way to get it into my hashtag or anything, but I love the fact that he calls the whales beasties.
Ah, so funny. That's such a great choice, and I'm sure will be a popular one from listeners that send in their list, and I can't believe I didn't even think of it. And let me just do this since I forgot to do it earlier. Those are our defiant torpedoes anytime we have a duplicate pick. Well, we love duplicates. So that is great. All right. So my Montgomery Scott pick is, I will start my five words in a hashtag, always up to the task, hashtag original miracle worker. And my episode is actually the Galileo 7, season 1, episode 13 from TOS. Mm-hmm. And I had a tough choice. I was thinking about The Trouble with Tribbles a little bit and the Galileo 7, but ultimately I went with seeing him in action more in terms of his work, which was in the Galileo 7 instead of kind of his personality, as in The Trouble with Tribbles when he's beating the crap out of some Klingons for insulting the Enterprise. So with these two episodes, for me, I feel like they're a good look at the two sides of Scotty, and I love how in the Galileo 7 he's 100% zero focused in on his work, and nothing else is distracting him. It doesn't matter that these 10-foot-tall creatures are attacking the crew, and that people are dying, and that Spock's basically got a mutiny on his hands because he's struggling with the command. Scotty's just keeping focus on the work. And I love that. He's going to figure out a way to get the shuttle off the ground. He's going to either drain the phasers or lighten the load on the ship. And he's got the electric light works when he's protecting the crew from being attacked. When he energizes the hull to scare the beasties away, the other beasties. And then the other element that I love in this is just that he's unflinchingly loyal to Spock, because everyone's freaking out and he's just doing the job. He's obeying his commands and he's trying to help him as much as possible. And there's this one scene where Boma comes in and he's literally, him and McCoy are basically screaming at Spock because he's not going to stop to have a funeral. And they're all yelling at Spock. And meanwhile, Scotty's right there. He's just working. He's completely ignoring him and getting off scot-free. He's working on some circuits. And when they leave, he just looks up at Spock and says, "Hey, can you help me with this conduit?" And I love that, because that's what, for me, Scotty's all about. Just the work and the love of engineering. So that was my pick. What's your take on that, Duncan?
Well, certainly we know he's the guy who, you know, he reads engineering manuals for fun, doesn't he? I'd say the two things he's really serious about are his drink and his work. You know, those are his kind of passions. So, yeah, that kind of makes sense to me.
All right, Sam, any take on Galileo 7?
I love in that episode how he kind of stands up to Spock as well. He kind of reminds Spock a lot that about his duty as a leader as well. He's to the point of giving him a bit of stick, but yeah, it's a great episode, and you're right, you do see him very hands-on. And
that's true. He ends up really helping out Spock by, well, in the middle of the work, just saying, you know, by the way, if you look at it this way, it'll help you. So yeah, that's one of my all-time favorite episodes. It's top five at Trek Ranks. So, all right, let's go on to round two. And Geordi LaForge from The Next Generation, portrayed by LeVar Burton. So, Duncan, what's your pick for LaForge?
So this was, again, one of those situations where I could have focused on a kind of Geordi episode, but actually the one that I ended up going for was one which you might not really think of as a Geordi episode, but he plays a really pivotal role in it. And that's the episode I, Borg. And it's the fact, I suppose what I really liked about Geordi in this episode is the fact that he goes in with one set of beliefs and one kind of position, but he's willing to change and he's willing to do a kind of about turn. And he's the first person who really does that. I mean, after that, we see Guinan doing the same thing and then eventually Picard doing the same thing. But Geordi is really the linchpin in that episode that makes it possible for them to, you know, to reevaluate the plan that they were going to carry out. Because you've got Beverly, who right from the start is quite kind of has serious kind of moral reservations about it. But everyone else is pretty much on board. And it's only Geordi, through getting to know Hugh, through giving him a name. I mean, it's Geordi who says, let's call him, Hugh, gives him the name and kind of takes the time to get to know him in a sense, even though, you know, he knows that really he's meant to be using him. And I think that's really interesting. I think it shows quite a positive aspect of his personality.
All right. Think of it this way. Every time you talk about yourself, you use the word we. We want this. We want that. You don't even know how to think of yourself as a single individual. You don't say, I want this, or I am Hugh. We are all separate individuals. I am Geordi. I choose what I want to do with my life. I make decisions for myself. For somebody like me, losing that sense of individuality is almost worse than dying.
When you sleep, there are no other voices in your mind.
No.
Are you ever lonely?
Sometimes. But that's why we have friends.
Friends?
Sure. Someone you can talk to, who will be with you when you're lonely. Someone who makes you feel better.
Like Geordi and Hugh.
So my five words in the hashtag are, neither of them are from Geordi in this case, but they are both quotes. Geordi must not be assimilated. Hashtag I will not assist you.
So good. Such a great pick. That was my other choice from where I went. I really struggled between that one, which is really Geordi-centric, and another pick. Sam, how about you and Iborg?
Oh, well, Iborg is one of my most favorite episodes of Star Trek ever. So I really understand where Duncan's coming from. Of course, my son is named Hugh as well.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Every time, you know, I say his name, I think of that scene with you. So yeah, and you're right. Geordi is Geordi's great. Geordi is brilliant with Hugh, and yeah, you're right. It isn't like a engineering-y focused episode, is it? But it does show Geordi at his best. So good pick, Duncan. Very good pick.
Yeah, and he also, you know, comes up with the that nefarious program to with the spatial geometry.
So, he does, yeah.
But
yeah,
they don't use it. So.
So it may not be about the engineering, but it's kind right, of, his, yeah, it definitely shows his skills are kind of
still problem solving. So, yeah. All right, Sam, what's your pick for Geordi LaForge?
Okay, my pick is Booby Trap.
Oh, yes.
It's my hashtag is engineers do it best in the holodeck. And my five words are, every time you touch the engines. And what's great, I thought, about Booby Trap was it showed Geordi in a personal light and in his career. It starts with a date with, was it Christy? Was it someone? I think her name was Christy.
I can't remember her name, yeah.
Geordi does what normal people do after a rejection like that, and he cracks onto a woman on the holodeck. But while she's there, he solves an imminent destruction of the Enterprise by conversing with her. And the episode shows everything that's great about Geordi. It shows him, the way he problem solves, which I really like, the way he thinks out loud. It shows his personal dilemma of not being able to find a girlfriend, which I cannot believe in 7 years. I mean, he had that crew member who was really interested in him. She was a very nice, smart, attractive young lady, and he turned her away. And I don't know. I sidetrack. I digress. Booby Trap. That's my episode.
I was wondering if someone was going to go there with Booby Trap, which is a great episode, and it does show Geordi in all of his positives and great lights, and then maybe his awkwardness too, which is definitely part of him. Duncan, what's your take on Booby Trap?
Yeah, I think that's I enjoy that episode. I steered clear of that because I felt like, I don't know, I suppose you're right, there is all the kind of engineering stuff. In my head, it's all about Geordi being hopeless, and I felt a bit bad for him. I thought I wanted to pick something where he was, you know, showing a more positive side, because he's, you know, he doesn't have much luck where romance is concerned generally, and, you know, I don't know, I always thought that was a bit harsh to his character somehow. I don't really see why he's so hopeless at it, but, you know, whatever.
You know, when I wrote this, I was more focused on the engineering side, actually. Okay. I just did it right now, I kind of focused on the jokey side. But
it's hard not to.
Yeah.
it does show him going back to the nuts and bolts of the ship, doesn't it? It's his level of understanding of engineering. It shows where he problem solves. He kind of goes back to the problem. He talks it. He doesn't just say, oh, let's try this, let's try that. He really thinks things through. He says, right, he does an analysis of the problem. He breaks it down. He always converses with others, even if they're not a real person, even if it's a computer or data anyway, I'm getting into my other reasons now for rankings. I'll end that there.
the one of the greatest mysteries in all of Star Trek will always be why he didn't hook up with Sonya Gomez.
Oh yeah.
My pick for Geordi LaForge, again, I really considered Ibor because I like the way that highlights his compassion and friendship with Hugh. But my five words in a hashtag is pragmatic, straight shooting miracle worker, hashtag 24th century scientist. And my pick here was I ultimately went with A Matter of Time. And even though this isn't really a Geordi episode per se, I love Geordi and the way he's just being Geordi in this episode. He's working really hard to save the planet that's being threatened for why Rasmussen is there. And he's totally in his element. He's using the technobabble. He's coming up with one idea after another to try to save this world, which is something we see him do a lot in TNG. But the main reason I picked this is that I love the scene at the end. It's always kind of stuck with me with him when Professor Rasmussen is basically observing and Geordi's there trying to make the last minute fix with Picard, and Picard says, okay, you come up to the ship now, we'll try this thing. And Geordi says, no, I should stay behind. It'll help with the odds. And I love when Rasmussen says, LaForge remained below. Because it just says everything about Geordi, that he's going to stay on this planet and give the residents of Penthara 4 just a slightly better chance of survival, even though the risk is that he's going to die if it doesn't work. So I love that moment for Geordi. And that's how I look at him when I think of Geordi.
That's my favorite line from that episode as well, I think. It's also the fact that, I suppose, because Rasmussen is trying to build up this whole kind of mythology around the Enterprise crew, and it is Geordi that gets the kind of real mythic line there. And, you get this sense of him as this kind of larger-than-life historical figure. And it's kind of a shame, in a way, that it all turned out to be, rubbish.
A hoax, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Oh, superb episode. And I've never really considered it from Geordi's point of view before. It seems like Rasmussen feels like his episode, doesn't it? It feels like very much he kind of sucks the air out of the room almost, doesn't he? But putting it that perspective on, it's an interesting way of looking at it. But that's quintessentially Geordi, isn't it? He would stay behind. He's the last person to do the LaForge barrel roll through the...
Yeah.
And there's so many TNG episodes that are framed similar to this one, where they're trying to solve some puzzle to save a planet, and Geordi's right in the middle of it. So I like that this kind of represents that. So, all right, let's move on to round three. And Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. So, Duncan, what's your pick for O'Brien?
Okay, this was an interesting one. I mean, in a way, my choice, it sort of focuses on O'Brien at work, but it's not so much the engineering. It's more, I suppose, the kind of being chief engineer, chief of operations, being the guy in charge. Because I think, in some ways, Geordi and O'Brien have very different managerial styles. I mean, one thing that people sometimes say about Geordi is he's not, if you think about Reg Barkley or someone, he's not always the nicest to some of the people under him. O'Brien, I think, has this really great relationship with some of his subordinates. And he's very much, because he's not an officer, he has this kind of sense of, yeah, I'm in charge, but basically we're kind of all in it together. And, he has a kind of, I don't know, a real sort of affection for his subordinates, I think, in some ways. And I think this comes across, more than in any other episode, in one which is one of my favourite episodes of DS9 anyway, which is The Ship, which I think is a fantastic episode. And it's not, again, you wouldn't necessarily think of it as an O'Brien episode, although he has a big part to play in it. But really, the kind of emotional weight of that episode all goes through O'Brien and his relationship with Munoz, who's his subordinate, who he has this kind of teasing relationship with at the beginning. And then, you know, gradually things kind of turn increasingly tragic. And I guess, you know, we know with O'Brien, this is a guy who's been through war before, who's seen a lot of kind of awful stuff before. And he just reacts in a very human way. I suppose that's the thing. You know, you can kind of rely on O'Brien to kind of give the closest to, you know, how one of us might react in some ways in that situation. He does a great job looking after this guy, trying to make things easier for him. But at the same time, you know, it obviously hits him quite hard. So my five words and hashtag are, you're going to make it, hashtag easy, Kike.
Ah. So much emotion in this pick. I love it. Such a great, great shout out for O'Brien. I feel like, I mean, you said it well. It's as much an O'Brien episode as it is Sisko or anybody else. All the emotion of that episode runs through him. And the stuff with Munoz is so well done because they set it up really nice with him appearing a few times before that and then dying in this episode. So, and O'Brien is so good, and when he's arguing with Worf and trying to protect his guys, it's a little bit similar to the way I looked at my pick. So, Sam, what's your take on the ship?
No, I very nearly picked the ship. It was so close to being my episode. Went back and forth with that and a couple, but yeah, the ship was very close to being picked for the exact same reasons you said. He does, you know, he's the engineer on a crash ship, so that's a big part of it. The way he confronts Worf as well, you see the human in him as well. It very much plays up to the fact that he's a non-com. Really, really good, really powerful episode where we mourn the death of the Red Shirt.
Super, super cool. Any episode of Trek Ranks where we talk about the ship is aces in my book. So, all right, Sam, what's your pick for Chief O'Brien?
Oh, this was a tough one. There were quite a few contenders in there. But I went with The Assignment.
Ooh.
Which wasn't the most obvious one. I went between the ship, civil defense was very close, but the assignment where Coco is overtaken by the Par Wraiths, who want to destroy the prophets, and O'Brien has to go on this covert mission where he's got to be appearing to, he has this very careful balance between having to obey or appearing to obey the Par Wraiths' demands. He's also got to figure out what's going on, what they're up to, how he's going to stop them and save his wife and child at the same time. So it wasn't 100% engineering problem. There's kind of the prophets and all that stuff that he doesn't quite understand or believe in. But he does use his engineering knowledge as a solution, and his connections with other people. He builds up that relationship with Rom, who does a stint in the brig, of course, for his his misdemeanors. I think it shows O'Brien as a capable engineer, as an officer, officer I use in inverted commas, and a family man as well, who is capable of being bribed, but he has to overcome that. He has to find another way, and he does that. So, my hashtag is O'Brien's Chronoton Exorcism. And my five words are, don't mess with the missus.
I love it. I feel like this is another great pick that shows his ingenuity. And again, we keep saying resourcefulness, but also the emotion of, or the passion of him, because he knows that he's doing this to try to save his wife and how critical that is and how hard that is. And we see that a little bit in the ship too, where he's got his resourcefulness to fix the ship, but he's also lamenting the loss of one of his crewmen and friends. That's super cool. Duncan, what's your take on The Assignment? Such a great pick.
Yeah, I think that is a really good pick. It's interesting. I guess I did think about it and I sort of discounted it, I guess because I, in my head, it was sort of fitting into that kind of O'Brien must suffer kind of trope in a way. And I guess, you know, if you think of O'Brien episodes, the obvious one is probably like Hard Time or something like that, where O'Brien is just absolutely put through the ringer.
Right.
But I think you're right, actually, to focus on the more positive side of it and the aspect of his ingenuity, his kind of ability to kind of think through the situation and to kind of play the situation. You know, he's not just a totally kind of passive stooge, in a sense, being used by this Parwraith. He is, you know, he does have more agency and more kind of skill than that. And it is, I mean, it's definitely an episode that shows off a lot of his skills. So I think that's a great pick.
Awesome. I love it. So mine's actually similar with both of those themes being touched on. So my five words in a hashtag are 211 episodes, TNG to Deep Space Nine, hashtag underrated tinkerer. And my episode is Hippocratic Oath from season 4 of Deep Space Nine, which I think is an awesome episode. And so when I think of Miles O'Brien, I think he's, I mean, I think everyone would agree, he's the most everyman kind of human character that they've ever had in Star Trek. He just feels like he's connected to today as much as anyone in Trek ever was. He's a family man. He's married. He's got kids. He likes to hang out with his friends and play darts or play games on the holodeck. And I just feel like his view of what is always happening around him is always really pragmatic in that whether even if he's being tortured or duplicated or bouncing through time, he's always grounded in 20th or 21st century, the viewer. So I think with it, and even in this case, when it comes to his views on Cardassians, and in this episode, the Jem'Hadar, also kind of grounded in the 20th century, because he's pretty cut and dried in terms of how he views those two races. And it's one of the reasons I chose Hippocratic Oath, because you get the full O'Brien in this episode. He's tinkering, he's a soldier, he's, again, being pragmatic in how he's approaching their situation, and he's not buying into any of this stuff about trying to help the Jem'Hadar. And then the show opens with him talking about he's got this very normal relationship with his wife. He's kind of bitching about how she's upset that he put a workbench in the bedroom, and Julian's trying to talk him through it. And he's saying, yeah, I wish she could be more like a man or more like you. Oh, shut up, Julian. So I love that. This episode's really got everything in terms of the bromance and Miles tinkering, and then also kind of his flashback to how he views Cardassians and Setlik 3 and the Jem'Hadar, and he's really laser focused on that. So Sam, what's your take on Hippocratic Oath?
Brilliant episode. I'm struggling to think of trying to remember the specific O'Brien parts of the episode. I remember my brain goes straight to the Dr. Bashir element of it, and I'm working on the cure.
Yeah, for me, he was just jumping in every time the Bashir was saying, "Hey, I think I can cure the Jem'Hadar of Ketracel White." O'Brien's going, "What are you talking about, man? You can't do that. That'll just make them even more dangerous." And Bashir's like, "No, it might change them. They might be able to be rehabbed a little bit."
I do like that about O'Brien. Yeah. That he does. He kind of almost represents the kind of. I think as well, being a Brit as well, he's kind of got these, you know, he's Irish. You kind of, everyone knows someone like him. He's kind of that very much down to earth. He's not quite on the same level as the rest of Starfleet, is he?
Yes, very, very grounded in current times.
And he does have that aspect that he's less kind of idealistic than a lot of them in some ways. I mean, another episode that I think has a similar kind of moment for O'Brien is Children of Time, where he's kind of quite slow to come around to the idea that they have to, you know, essentially make this sacrifice for the sake of these people. And that's not to say he's a bad person or whatever, but I think he has kind of the same kind of hesitations that, you know, most of us would probably have being asked to make those kind of sacrifices. Whereas, you know, someone like Captain Janeway will just, you know, spin on a dime and, you know, throw everything of her own wishes out the window in order to help someone else. I think that's quite a kind of a real aspect of his. And I think another great, you know, one of the great things about Hippocratic Oath, I did feel slightly bad that my choice didn't have anything on the relationship with Bashir, because I think that's one of the greatest aspects of O'Brien as a character, is that friendship. And Hippocratic Oath is a great one because it really puts the strain on that friendship. And I think at the, isn't that the episode where at the end they're kind of going back together and they're kind of sort of barely on speaking terms? There's like, there's real damage has been done to their friendship in a sense by what they've been through together. You know, it hasn't brought them closer in a sense. It's kind of driven a wedge between them, and they're going to have to deal with that.
Right. But it's also really well done in terms of the writing, because basically they say, hey, well, we'll get together. Yeah. Maybe we'll give it a few days before we get together.
Yeah.
And you kind of get the sense that, okay, after a week, they'll be back to normal. But until then, they're a little miffed.
Human. Gold uniform indicates a specialty in security or engineering. Rank, Chief Petty Officer. You are what Starfleet refers to as a non-com.
That's right.
You must have a great deal of experience.
I've been around.
That makes you a priority target. We will kill you first.
Your escape plan was flawed.
Obviously, I got caught.
Even if you had killed the guard, you never would have reached the runabout.
I guess we'll never know that.
I know.
I'm sure you do.
We're not like the other human.
We have our differences.
You don't like helping us.
No, I don't.
Good. I don't like it either.
I'm glad we understand each other.
You can bring me up on charges, you know.
No, that's not really my style.
I wish things could have been different, Julian.
So do I.
And I'm sorry I had to destroy your work.
You didn't have to, Chief. You had a choice. And you chose to disobey orders, override my judgment, and condemn those men to death.
Yes, I did. Because I thought it was the only way to save your life. Whatever else you may think of who I am and what I did, at least try to understand that.
Tonight's supposed to be our weekly darts game.
Don't worry. I don't feel much like playing either.
Maybe in a few days.
Let's move on to round four and break down B'Elanna Torres. So, Duncan, what's your pick for B'Elanna Torres?
Okay, so I really love B'Elanna Torres as a character. And I suppose, you know, one of the big things that I do really like about her is, well, it's a combination of things. One is, I think she's a very strong character. She's got a real kind of sense of grit and commitment and so on. But it's also the fact that she has what feels like quite a believable psychology. And she has a lot of, you know, she's someone who does have a lot of kind of demons from her past one way or another, whether that's to do with her family or to do with the Marquis or to do with kind of regrets about decisions she's made in the past and so on. And I think, you know, some of those issues play into a lot of her kind of best kind of character episodes, which I absolutely adore. But because I'd kind of set myself this imposition in a way of sticking to episodes where she's really doing some engineering, the one I went for was an early episode, but it's one that I think sort of captures both those elements of that kind of guilt and hesitation about the past, and also that kind of grit and determination. And it's the episode Dreadnought, which is the one where this missile that she's been responsible for reprogramming is going to destroy a planet in the Delta Quadrant. And basically she has to go and beam over there and try and get it to change its mind, in a sense. And I really liked in that episode the sense that, first of all, she was quite quick to accept responsibility for it. She talks a lot about how, she felt like when this missile went missing, she felt relieved because she felt this kind of shame over what she'd done with it, because she'd done it without Chakotay's approval. And it really hurt her to feel that she'd kind of, you know, she'd sort of lost his trust in her in some way. So it's very much this kind of story of something, a mistake from the past coming back to kind of, you know, bite you in a sense. But she's very quick as well to step up and say, you know, I'm going to go over there. I'm going to sort it out. I'm going to blow it up while I'm on board if needs be. And, you know, in that episode, we have Janeway doing this very heroic kind of going down with the ship and setting the auto-destruct and all this kind of thing. But we also have B'Elanna over on the missile. They're sort of vying with each other almost as to which of them is going to blow themselves up and solve the problem first. And I think it's a really great episode, really dramatic episode. And I think it definitely showcases that kind of grit and determination, and also of course her engineering talent in the fact that she managed to reprogram this thing in the first place, which seemingly was quite complicated. And so my five words and a hashtag, it's going to be another slightly emotional one, I think, it's my fault, no one else's, hashtag let me stay.
Oh, so good. That's such a great episode and such a great B'Elanna Torres episode. She has so much going on here with her emotions and her talent and her skills. I love it. Sam, how about you?
I wish I'd picked that episode now. That's such a good one.
No, it's great.
It's a great
I'm thinking
episode.
The same
yeah.
thing.
I there's a bit that always just stands out that I remember. It's when she's ashamed that she even used her own voice, like the vanity and the ego. Yeah. You can just see that. I'm really fascinated by the emotion shame. It's a really interesting emotion in every human and non-human for that matter. And I imagine it's tenfold for a Klingon or a half Klingon to admit shame. It's a very powerful mover in people. And she handled that brilliantly. She really brought it to surface and almost brought it out in the open, kind of removes its power. It's a bit like fear in that way. Yeah, and it, you know, she got to show off her technical prowess as well, and out-logicked it. So yeah, she did. It was a superb episode, and very character focused, but also focused on her abilities as well. Good pick.
Authorized entry detected. Initiating DNA scan. B'Elanna Torres confirmed. Hello, B'Elanna. Your last systems access was on stardate 47582. Current date is 49447. Time 0840 hours. Did you sleep well last night?
Not so well, to tell you the truth. Activate programmer interface.
Your presence was not anticipated during the mission. Please explain.
Something's gone wrong with your programming, Dreadnought. Display targeting schematic.
A self-diagnostic has been conducted every 14 hours. No malfunctions have been detected.
Maybe there's something wrong with your diagnostic systems, too. Identify target.
Echelon 5.
What targeting parameters are you using?
Size. Radiothermic signature. Atmospheric composition. Relative...
Enough. Dreadnought, you're nowhere near Echelon 5.
Based on available data, you are mistaken, B'Elanna.
Let me check out your navigational systems.
Access to primary navigational systems is denied at stage 3 alert status.
That was my idea, wasn't it?
Affirmative.
Sam, how about your round 4 pick?
Okay, my B'Elanna Torres pick. The hashtag for this episode is hashtag Lieutenant B'Elanna Torres is an extremely proficient humanoid. And the sort of five-word description is attack of the automated personnel units. The episode is
love it.
Fantastic.
I picked this episode probably for very similar reasons to what Duncan said for Dreadnought, actually. Prototype shows her curiosity as an engineer. She starts off very curious. And it's, I can't remember what season this is, but it's very early on in Voyages.
Yeah, season 2, I think, yeah.
It's like one or two, you know, it's quite early on. And she, it's the way she's so curious about this, like that's in her nature. And so far, up to that point, I think her nature had been very, you know, let's punch people and let's be angry. And we finally get to see that other side of her, the engineer in her, where she just wants to tinker and fix this curious thing. And of course she mentions data in it, which just, you know.
Right.
And then there's that moment in her where she she realizes what she's done and realizes the consequence of her curiosity and her invention. And she immediately acts to fix it. And it almost shows that her growth as a person and as an engineer, she realizes her power and what that's capable of. But then there's a scene at the end where she's talking to Janeway, and she's emotional about it, and she's proud of her creation, but also there's the shame there as well of, oh God, I made a wacky exterminating machine again. Happen again. So yes, that's my essay prototype.
These two picks are great because they are very, very similar in terms of her mechanics and the way that the stories are structured and how Balan is interacting with these two. My pick is a little bit different. It was more about the kind of the setup for Balan, and what the thing I like about Balan so much is her consistency. So my five words in the hashtag were brilliant character with real depth, hashtag never wasted a moment. And my episode is right from the start. It's Parallax, season 1, episode 3. Mm-hmm. And it's basically the episode where Balan gets named chief engineer by Janeway. And this is a ridiculously underrated episode to start with. I love that the pillar of this episode is Balan Torres and that consideration of whether she should be the chief engineer. So there's this moment in the senior staff briefing with Carrie, who's obviously her competition for the chief engineering position. And I love this moment because she's just sitting there kind of quietly thinking about her ideas and how they can approach this problem. And Carrie comes up with this idea, and it's a pretty good one. And she just really calmly says, yeah, it's a good idea, but it won't work. And then she just cuts through it all. She starts combining a bunch of different angles. She's not being mean. She's just being really direct and focused. And she spits out some ideas and some spatial distortion techno babble. And again, eventually everyone realizes that that's the best plan. And Janeway realizes that she needs to be her new chief engineer. And I love the interaction of her in that episode. And the thing I love most about Torres, I just said briefly, is that her consistency of her character from the start of the series all the way to the end is one of the best in Trek history. She's just super tough. She's vulnerable. She's aggressive. She's brilliantly intelligent. And she's just totally dedicated to this problem solving on the engineer side. So I love that. The other episode I was really thinking about was Day of Honor as well, which is one that's one of my top 10 episodes of Trek Ranks that I love, when she's kind of fighting through her realization that she does love Paris and she can admit it to herself. So I love Torres. She's fantastic. Anybody got a take on Parallax?
I actually seriously sort of consider that one, because I think mainly just because of that interaction between Janeway and Balana, which I think is really kind of magical. And maybe we don't see enough of in a way going forward because things sort of settle down more. But that kind of sense that these are the two, you really get this sense on Voyager. It's these two women who basically understand the nuts and bolts of how the ship works and everything. And then all these men just kind of sit around and are like, well, I've got no idea what they're talking about, And that kind of excitement for science and technology and so on, I think just really comes across between the two of them. You really feel like there's a kind of meeting of minds there. And it's a wonderful scene. It's a wonderful moment. And it definitely gives you a sense of who this character is, I think much more so than you get in, say, in Caretaker or, kind of up to that point. I mean, it's early in the series' run, but it's not there right at the start. This is the kind of point where maybe we kind of get to grips with Balana a bit more.
Yeah, I think this is a really good choice for an episode. I also considered it. I remember when I think about the episode, it's almost like the story, the science part of the story is very much secondary to the working out what to do with the personnel on the ship. It's kind of a HR episode, isn't it? Who's going to run the ship? How are we going to merge these two crews? So they come up with this, I can't remember what the issue was. It was like a quantum singularity or I don't know. I can't remember what it was. But there was some real techno babble thing and because Janeway's very anti-Balana, isn't she, at first? And then they hit it off. They completely they completely hit it off over science. You can see them almost, you know, getting orgasmic talking about the solution, can't you? They really get in there. And that's almost when Janeway realizes, yes, Balana is the woman for the job. And Chakotay was backing her all the way, which was also, he knows she's the right person for the job, but she obviously has her slight anger issues, which eventually become, you know, she works them out. She manages to use that power to command and be an effective leader in engineering. So,
yeah,
it's good choice.
Yeah, I love all those elements. It's really great. Okay, let's jump into round five. And Duncan, what's your pick for Charles Tripp Tucker III?
Well, one of the things that I really love about Tripp is the sense that he really kind of wears his heart on his sleeve. He's a very kind of emotionally open character. I think you kind of, you know, there's not much side to him in a sense. And I actually went for an episode which is, you know, what many people think probably should have been the final episode of Enterprise, which is Terra Prime. I think that two-parter is a fantastic story. It's a great story overall. It's a great story for the whole crew, but of course it's particularly a very moving story for Tripp and T'Pol. And it is also, I was thinking about it and I had a sort of hesitation. I was thinking, but is he really as an engineer in this episode, or is he just as this kind of, you know, as a human being in a sense? But then I remembered actually it's Tripp who manages to redirect the whatever that thing is on Mars so that it doesn't hit the target and it actually goes straight into the water by the Golden Gate Bridge instead. So actually it's Tripp that saves the day, quite apart from anything else. But the scene that I suppose I was kind of drawn to and focusing on was, you know, really that last scene between him and T'Pol, because it's so moving. And, it, you know, I've never managed to watch that scene without being in floods of tears at the end of it. And so the five words and the hashtag that I've chosen, I think kind of encapsulate, you know, both the kind of emotion of that moment, but also the sense that Tripp is someone who, despite everything awful that's happened to him and all that he's been through, he does keep kind of coming back with a degree of hope and with a degree of positivity. So my five words in the hashtag are human DNA and Vulcan DNA, hashtag it'd probably be okay.
What a great outside of the box pick. I love it. I hadn't considered this one, and obviously it's super emotional for Tripp at the end. How about you, Sam?
This Terra Prime is one of my most favorite episodes of Star Trek ever. It is such a good episode. I think about it a lot. I think about it more in the past couple of years with the political climate. There's someone like, I can't remember his name, the baddie in it. There's people like, he is the Nigel Farage of the of that time, isn't he? Kind of.
I had the exact same thought because I was rewatching it today in preparation for that. That's exactly, you know, even down to the kind of, I don't know, I think there's something about him, Paxton is his name.
Yeah.
The fact that he wears a suit, that he feels very much like someone of our own time somehow. Yeah. He doesn't feel like a kind of science fiction villain. You're right, definitely. I mean, you know, certainly in the UK in the last couple of years, these are kind of attitudes that,
like, slimy and,
yeah, exactly, absolutely. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. And yeah, the whole thing with Tripp and T'Pol and the baby, oh my god, emotionally compromised every time. It's a very good episode, and yeah, it's
so well done.
Yeah, all round brilliant. So good choice.
Thanks.
All right, Sam, what's your pick for Tucker?
Okay, this is bad, this one. This one, I really struggled with Tripp. I really struggled because I'd come up with this criteria of the most skilled engineer. All my episodes so far have been engineering focused, like where they've, either the episode or film, or, you know, the main focus has been the chief engineer fixing a problem.
Right.
And Tripp had so many strong episodes, probably more than any other engineer, but try and find one of him purely solving an engineering problem for most of the episode was actually quite hard, I found anyway. But Enterprise is probably my weakest series, being the most recent from Discovery. I haven't watched it the most, so, you know, I put that in. But I picked which one's the hashtag? There it is. The hashtag is Space Pirates Stole My Antimatter Injectors. And the five-word description is Tripp rewrites the Cochrane equation. And it's the episode of Anomaly, it's weather in the Delphic Expanse, and the aliens are stuck there as well. They come on board and they steal various parts of the ship, and Archer gets confrontational, and is he going to torture them, and he puts someone in the airlock. It's all very nasty. But for Trip, he couldn't create a stable warp field, and you know, the solution is he literally has to rewrite Cochrane's warp equation, which I looked up, and in case you want to know, it is when the curvature of space a ship is traveling through causes a multiplication of the relative speed depending on the mass of nearby matter. Wow. The problem with the warp field, can't create a warp field. So Trip kind of had to rewrite that. And I thought, you know what, for that one point, that makes you a pretty ballsy engineer when you're having to get right back and when you want to consult with Isaac Newton. That's some good engineer points. It's not the strongest Trip episode by any means, but I thought he earned his salt there.
How's it coming? Could be better. Creating a stable warp field isn't easy. Laws of physics will cooperate. The Cochrane equation, it's not constant here. Problems in the quantum variables. Every time I try to compensate, spatial gradients get thrown out of whack. Either we get away from these anomalies, or we're going to have to rewrite the book on warp theory. And I don't have to tell you how long it took Zeph from Cochrane the first time around.
It's an amazing episode of Star Trek. It's one of my, pretty sure it's top 10 at my Trek Ranks Enterprise listing, if not top 15. But it's really smart pick, because he is doing a lot to try to fix the situation they're in with these anomalies. I love this pick. Genius. Duncan, what's your take?
Yeah, I think that's a great pick. That wouldn't have occurred to me, I suppose. I mean, I sort of decided to steer clear of season 3 just because there's such a big kind of arc for Trip in there, but I wasn't quite sure where to sort of pin it. I did think briefly about Similitude, partly because there's that sense of, again, it's like Trip, you know, Archer has that bit of dialogue towards the end, doesn't he, where he says, you know, I need Trip, basically, you know, Enterprise needs Trip and the human race needs Enterprise, basically. So Trip is the kind of linchpin. So there is that kind of real sense of his importance and of his ability. But in the end, I kind of steered clear of that because I thought, well, is this a Trip episode? Who is the, you know, is Sim Trip? Right. Is it a bit unfair to use an episode that's about a kind of duplicate or whatever? But I think that's a really interesting pick to go with Anomaly. And I mean, I'd kind of forgotten that moment that you talked about, Sam, but that is, you're right, that's, you know, give that guy an engineering medal. That sounds like pretty impressive stuff.
I need Trip! Trip!
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that scene. All right, so I actually thought about Similitude as well, but I picked it in a recent episode for duplicates and doubles. So I stayed away from it, and instead I landed on my only pick that really doesn't have that much to do with engineering, although his curiosity is showcased. But so my five words in a hashtag are, well, this is more about Trip. It has nothing to do with the episode. I just wanted to say, keep your shirt on, Lieutenant. Hashtag charming and gritty. I love Trip Tucker. So I think, and that has nothing to do with the fact that, actually it has everything to do with the fact that he was my commanding officer and sat about 10 feet away from me when he looked up at, when he looked at me and said, son of a bitch, hung up on us. I love that. So I thought about picking that awakening as well, but I decided not to. So even if this brings the show to a screeching halt, my choice is Cogenitor because of just the heart and also just this impetuous joy that you see in Tucker. Because the thing I love about Tucker is that he's always so excited about being in space. And I love that. And he loves the work. And ultimately, in this episode, what he does, you know, his excitement of getting to look at the technology on this alien ship, you know, leads him to think he's helping this cogenitor, the third gender of this species that's used for procreation. And we all know how that ended up. Not well. So obviously, you know, his heart's always in the right place and certainly in the right place in this episode, even though the outcome was terrible. And even when he was struggling, you talk about that season three arc when when he's struggling with that vengeance that he has against the Zindi because of his sister's death, you know, but even through all that, he ends up, you know, in the right place with his heart and emotion. And that's one of the things I love about Trip, who's one of my all time favorite characters. So, all right, Sam, what's your take on Cogenitor?
You know, I nearly picked Cogenitor. I was really close to picking it for those same reasons. Not the pregnancy part of the story, but the part where he's on the ship that's so foreign in every way. His senses are overloaded, but he does have that, like you said, that curiosity where he just wants to know and understand everything. And there's a lot of episodes where you see that, where, because of course the technology is still fairly new. Other technologies are fairly new, and that ship was so alien. It was good to watch. I didn't pick it in the end. Cogenitor, I have mixed feelings about it, and I still haven't quite worked out where I stand on Cogenitor. One minute I'm like, yeah, it's a great episode. It's great. A man gets pregnant. And then the next episode, I'm like, why? He just handed the baby over and never saw it again, really?
Oh, wait a second. That's unexpected.
Unexpected. You're thinking of unexpected.
Oh, I was thinking of unexpected. I'm sorry.
This is the one, not pregnant, but well, the family gets pregnant, but because they use the cogenitor who kills herself when he teaches her how to read, or him, or,
well, they don't. That's the whole thing.
I'm with you. I'm with you there.
The family never get pregnant.
Oh, that's right. They don't. That's right. They don't get pregnant. Oh, that makes it even.
And it's all Trip's fault.
I'm with you. Sorry, my bad. Yeah, I'm with you.
No, easy. Easy mistake to make, and I'm actually glad you brought up Unexpected, because Unexpected is actually not as bad as people remember, because you're right that when you go four episodes in, or however many episodes in, you're like, really? They're already doing the guy's pregnant episode? What? But it's really cleverly well done in terms of how they represent it, so I totally get that.
I'm with you there. Okay.
All right, but I like that segue. So, Duncan, how about you on Cogenitor?
Well, I really love Cogenitor. It's a good job you didn't pick Unexpected, because I think I would struggle to have much to say about that episode. But Cogenitor, I think, is a fantastic episode. I think it's a really beautifully shot episode as well, a really interesting episode. It's got a lot going for it. I understand why people have issues with it. I kind of think it's a bit unfair on Trip, that episode. I mean, I think, you know, yes, you can debate whether he did the right thing or not. And, you know, when I've rewatched it more recently, I've come down, you know, maybe slightly harder on Trip than I did when I first saw it. But I do feel like he kind of shoulders a lot of blame for stuff that he couldn't maybe predict where it was going to go. And I think whether or not you think he did the right thing or the wrong thing, or, you know, whatever the rights and wrongs of it are, it's clear, as you said, his heart was in the right place. He thought he was doing the right thing. You know, there's something, one of the positive qualities of his character, I think, is he does have a certain kind of naive quality about him. He has a certain kind of honestness. He has a sort of straightforwardness. And I guess that is kind of almost what leads him down that route of not really thinking it through enough necessarily, or not really questioning things enough, but just kind of going with his gut and going with what he thinks is right. And, you know, although in this instance everything kind of goes horribly wrong as a result, you know, those are likable qualities in themselves.
Yeah, and the ending when he tells, he's all excited again because he's an excited guy, tells Archer, "I did exactly what you would have done, Captain," and Archer's like, "You think that's what I would have done?" It just dresses him down. Super harsh. Mm. Okay. That was an awesome breakdown of five awesome characters. And now comes the tough part on Trek Ranks. We're going to rank these five in order and figure out exactly who each of us have as our number one series engineer.
I am a Jem'Hadar. He is a Vorta. It is the order of things.
All right. So as I said before, the order of things is going to be pretty quick this week. I'm just going to unveil our picks. So Duncan and Sam, it's time to face the plasma exhaust. Duncan, let's start with you from number five to number one. Please relay your top five Star Trek series engineers.
Okay, so I've had to do a little bit of thinking on the hoof, because I actually originally ranked my episodes, and I realised looking at it, my rankings for the engineers and the episodes are often quite different. In fact, my number five episode is my number one engineer. That could be a clue if you can try and work out where that might be going. But anyway, so I think I've managed to work out my rankings for the engineers. So at number five, and I suspect with apologies to Sam, I've got Geordi. I think Geordi's a great character. I really like Geordi. He seems like a nice guy, but he doesn't interest me as much as a lot of these other engineers, I guess. At number four, I've got Trip Tucker. I think Trip is a great character, one of my favourite Enterprise characters. I really love the performance. At number three, I've got Scotty. I mean, what do you need to say about Scotty? Scotty is just wonderful, and James Doohan, is a joy to behold. Brings so much kind of warmth and character and humour as well, and is you know, such an icon, really. But the two that I suppose I find the most interesting as characters are the kind of real, you know, sort of 90s engineers. And it was a tough one deciding between the two of these, but in the end I put O'Brien at number two. I think O'Brien is a wonderful character. I really love him. I love Kolmini's performance. I love the relationship with Bashir. I love the fact that he's quite a different character for Star Trek. He's not really like the kind of typical Starfleet officers. He's definitely bringing something very, very different and very unique that I think is, you know, really adds something to Deep Space Nine. But my number one pick was B'Elanna Torres. And although, as I say, the episode I picked, Dreadnought, is not one of my favourite Star Trek episodes. I mean, I think it's a great episode, but it's, you know, wouldn't be in my one of my kind of top rankings. B'Elanna is definitely one of my favourite Star Trek characters. I think it's, you know, it's partly Roxanne Dawson's performance is uniformly excellent. She's a brilliant actress. I think the way they write that character is wonderful. I think she's, you know, a really interesting, inspiring, gritty, quite real character. I mean, like I said before, I think one of the great things about Torres is she has this kind of real depth of psychology. She has this kind of real sense of someone with a lot of baggage, with a past that she brings. And I think, you know, although I didn't focus on them, you know, episodes like Extreme Risk, like Lineage, where you really are kind of delving into B'Elanna's, or Barge of the Dead even, really delving into her kind of her issues and her baggage, in a sense. Those episodes, they could become very soapy. They could become a bit cheesy in a way, but they never do, because partly they always seem to know how to write that character. And also, I just think Roxanne Dawson's performance, you know, when she gets one of those kind of meaty episodes, she just knocks it out of the park. And, you know, you absolutely believe every word that comes out of her mouth. So she is my number one engineer.
I love this list. Great job on the quick reset, because that was a great explanation. And and Torres, I mean, you're right, Extreme Risk and Lineage we didn't talk about, but those two episodes, and baggage is probably a good word. I mean, that's what it is, and it adds so much depth to her as a character. She's incredible. All right, Sam, let's break down your top five engineers. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready. Wait, I've changed this list about.
I love it. We're changing as we go. That's the beauty of Trek Ranks.
5 minutes ago. Okay, so my fifth spot, I have Trip Tucker.
Okay.
And I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, because just as a reminder, my criteria here is what we've seen of them as an engineer, and not necessarily my favorite person or anything like that. So yeah, Trip is in fifth, and you've got to give him the benefit of the doubt here, because he only had 3 seasons to show off his engineering prowess, so he was cut short. But to counter that, he had more episodes than any engineer, if you think about what he contributed to. And funny enough, I've even wrote here, you know, there's Cogenitor and even that pregnant episode, Unexpected. So, you know, I'd even wrote down the difference. Right. I shouldn't have wine and record these. It's not good. but I struggle to find shows that showed him excelling as an engineer in comparison to others. So that's why he's fifth. He did a great job turning nacelles into catwalk homes, and Shockwave were another great episode.
You don't need to apologize. Trip, he's still number five. That's great. He's number five in Star Trek history.
I know, but
he's up there above Argyle. He's above the chief engineer on the Discovery.
You know? All right, I'm dying to hear the rest of this. Who's number four?
This is like one of those sessions that Riker and Troy have to do, where they, you know, they go through the promotions and everything. Yeah, crew evaluations, that's the one.
Okay, on my fourth place, I have Chief O'Brien. Obviously, an incredible and capable engineer. He's more of a hands-on hardware sort of guy, which is great. I think he may have rated higher if we'd seen him on a warp vessel, but, you know, being on a stationary vessel, I kind of got the impression he was more of a repairman than pushing the boundaries of space.
Wow. All right. I love it.
But he did work on a Cardassian station fused with Starfleet technology, so he did get to be creative sometimes.
Repairmen everywhere have just been insulted. So,
who's number? Actually, what Duncan was saying about how you feel he was kind of more than, you know, your sort of more relatable. I don't know. He sort of reminds me of the sort of friend you'd be sat in the pub and he'd be like, "Oh God, exactly. here comes a spoonhead." Yep. You know, you're like, "Shh, can you not?"
Brilliant.
Okay, moving on to where are we up to? Number three. I've gone Scotty, and I thought he'd be my first, maybe. So it'd be higher. I mean, he wrote the book on engineering operating protocol flow sensors. And you know, going back to, you know, the Simon Pegg version as well, he's incredibly intelligent. We didn't see as much of that, I don't think, as some of the other engineers, hence why I said, again, only three seasons, but lots of movies. Second place, I've gone Geordi LaForge. And Geordi, in terms of character, would be my number one. He's definitely my favourite engineer, but I think in terms of episodes, my criteria, he came in number two. I actually, Duncan, you mentioned earlier that you thought maybe he wasn't as good with people, and I actually completely disagree. I actually thought he was very good in the way he managed his team. I felt very much he was a team player. He'd always have people round the pool table and he'd converse with everyone and get everyone's opinion, and he'd get I thought he had the right balance of boss versus mate in 10 forward. And yeah, there was the issue with Barclay, but he overcame that. He learned more about himself and thought, "Oh God, you know what? I'm not being a good boss here. If I'm a better boss, I'll have a better work. Mate, so yes.
Fair point.
Thank you. But I can see where you're coming from, but I found he was very good at conversing with others, and that's then we saw him briefly in what was the episode? Was it Timeless in Voyager? He's a captain, and he's very fair, yeah. And he's very kind, he's very thoughtful. But he's not like the Chief O'Brien engineer. He's very much a software guy. He's a thinking man, I find. Mm. So he's my number two. And number one, I also have B'Elanna Torres.
Amazing.
Yeah, and for many reasons, as I listed the reasons, she came out well on top. She was part of the team that broke the Warp 10 barrier. She built a slipstream drive. She kept Voyager running and rebuilt it practically after being destroyed by the Borg, the Hirogen, the Vidians. It was the state of the ship. When it was in a deadlock. I mean, it was completely, if it had been in the Alpha Quadrant, they would have scrapped that for good. Her engineering capability was so good, she was promoted above actual Starfleet engineers. And she kept Voyager in peace whilst battling the Borg, getting it home whilst pregnant, whilst giving birth practically. So,
that's right.
Trip doing that. Trip was a whiny little thing about being pregnant. So, yes, B'Elanna Torres, hands down.
All right. So, two votes for B'Elanna already. That's amazing. All right. Well, I'll go through my five picks then. And my number five is Geordi LaForge from TNG. I agree with, I think you made a great point there, Sam, about that he actually was good in terms of being a boss and how he involved everybody, except for the Barclay stuff, which would lead me to the main point. He was just written a little too inconsistently for me. I just had trouble connecting with his character over the years. But I think him in Geordi in the movies for me is awesome. He's got a lot to do in all four movies, and I think he's really good in those. So All right, my number four pick is, again, it was tough. It's Montgomery Scott, the original Miracle Worker, who I also love seeing him being played by Simon Pegg, and especially in Star Trek Beyond, he was so good. But love Scotty, but ultimately was my number four. My number three is my commanding officer, Trip Tucker, who, again, I said it when I talked about him. I'm just so excited. I love the way he's so excited about being in space. He's always fired up to be there and be doing his job in a real consistent way that, unlike, I think, almost any other character. So that's one of my favorite things about Trip. And my number two is the half Klingon, half human B'Elanna Torres, who I believe to be one of the most consistently written characters in Trek history, from the very beginning to the end. Her character and the beats that Roxanne Dawson hit were just spot on all the way through, with the way she was vulnerable and aggressive and had that baggage and anger, but the ability also to really be a good friend and leader, and obviously a clever engineer. And then my number one is Chief Engineer Miles O'Brien, who's just the everyday tinkerer that I just love the way he kind of shines the modern day light on everything that's going on around him in Star Trek. So one of my favorite characters, but also I just love when he's working on stuff. I love it. He's comfy. If I needed an engineer, I'd want that guy around. He's just super calming, and I don't have time to play choose the changeling. I'm just working on fixing the problem. So I love Miles O'Brien. So in this breakdown, that's pretty amazing that we've got two picks for B'Elanna Torres at number one, and I had her at number two. And Geordi LaForge, we had two number five picks and a second place poor finish. Poor Geordi. Sorry, man. Hey, we still
unlucky in love, unlucky in Trek ranks.
We still love Geordi. It has nothing to do with that. All right. So, I mean, awesome ranks, awesome conversation. I love the way we got deep on these engineers. Fantastic job, you guys. So, all right. So this week, there's no need for us to go into our regeneration cycle. So instead, we're going to go ahead and move straight into our temporal causality loop.
The Enterprise has been caught up in a temporal causality loop, and I suspect that something similar may have happened to you.
And this week's temporal causality loop is a bit of a special one for me. So last week we got another great voicemail from one of our listeners, and it was a true, very true temporal causality loop, because it was a trip into a temporal riff all the way back to the year 2005. So our show two episodes ago was our top five doppelgangers, duplicates, and doubles. And one of the best picks we received was from Cindy Red 60 on Twitter. And her pick was for Star Trek The Experience, which is the perfect duplicate and double of Quark's Bar on Deep Space Nine's Promenade. She's not wrong. I love this pick. So here's the voicemail that she left for us.
Hi, Trek Ranks. This is Cindy Red at Cindy Red 60. And I'm calling to tell you my number one doppelganger, and it is Quark's at the Star Trek Experience. And here is Colin, the Klingon who worked at Quark, singing for us. Thank you very much. Bye.
So she didn't say anything on the voicemail, because that's kind of how we roll. But Cindy Red 60 is my sister, who I love dearly. And I had no idea she was leaving me that voicemail. And I don't know how in the world she still has a recording of one of the Klingons singing to us at Quark's Bar, that famous Klingon warrior song. So that was pretty cool to get that voicemail.
That is amazing. So,
Duncan, Sam, any chance you guys ever made it out to Star Trek The Experience?
I did. I did just before it closed down in 2008.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, about a month before. Brilliant. I would live there. In fact, when I was 16, I tried to apply for a job there.
Brilliant.
I did, funnily enough. I was in the States at the time visiting family in Arizona, and it was my 15th birthday, I think. This was 1998. And we flew out to Las Vegas especially to go to the experience. And I have a strong memory of Quarks because I had my first ever burrito in Quarks at the Star Trek the Experience. And that's a love for burritos has stayed with me.
excuse me, you had Hasperat. It was not a burrito.
Of course. Okay. Yeah. You're right. And I've been eating Hasperat ever since.
I love that place. I went there more than a dozen times through the years with my sister, Cindy Red 60. So that was pretty cool. So a bit of a personal take on the temporal causality loop for me this week. As always, just want to thank everyone again for all your great responses to the Trek Ranks podcast. Keep your list coming to me at Trek Ranks on Twitter or at Enterprise Extra so we can retweet them. But we also want to hear from you, as we just did for my sister. So please put together your own list of top five series engineers or your top five Discovery Season 1 moments or any list from any of our shows in the past. Give us a call at the Tricorder Transmissions at 609-512-5527. At 609-512-LLAP. So hopefully we'll hear from you so you can be featured on the next episode of Trek Ranks. And on the next episode of Trek Ranks, we have a great topic to explore. So a few months ago, we stumbled into an awesome show that someone from my work joked with me about, thinking it was kind of a goofy topic or too niche of a topic to actually work. And that was our top five scenes in a turbo lift. So honestly, once I thought about that for a minute, I realized that was an awesome, amazing topic for a show. And we go back and find it. It's episode number 16, I think. Great show. So anyway, we're turning that into a series of shows now. And next up on our list is going to be our top five scenes in a shuttlecraft or shuttle pod, or hell, you can even pick a worker bee if you want, whatever you're inclined to pick. So Duncan and Sam, really quick, what's anything jumping out at you as a top five scene in the shuttlecraft, Duncan?
I don't know if it counts, but I love that scene in Timescape. It's a runabout, but I guess a runabout is kind of pretty much a shuttlecraft.
Runabouts count?
You know, with the fruit that all goes all, moldy yes. and disgusting and everything. So it's kind of really creepy, that scene. And also the fact that we get to see the back of the runabout, which I don't think we ever see at any other point doing. It's a surprisingly spacious room they've got back there.
Yeah, it's one of the first times, and he just keeps talking in one long uninterrupted sentence.
Yeah.
Yes. Sam, how about you? Any
There's so many choices. Picard and Wesley eating cucumber sandwiches. That was thrilling. Kes giving birth.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Jake and Nog taking that shuttlecraft and running into the thing. Yes. Classic.
Yeah, this is going to be a pretty broad canvas, so we'll have a lot to choose from. Shuttle pods, shuttlecrafts, runabouts, worker bees, whatever you want. So, all right. So before we wrap it up, just a huge thank you to Duncan Barrett and Sam Darragh. Great to have you guys on the show. Awesome job. Any final thoughts? Hope you guys had fun.
Brilliant time. Thank you ever so much for having us on. I do encourage everyone to listen to, when you're listening to Trek Ranks, try this yourself. Try actually writing in order because it's so different. It's amazing.
Brutal.
It's really great, hard work.
It's fun. It's fun.
It is fun, but it's harder work than I was sort of expecting. You know, I mean, it's kind of, you get your homework and you have to, yeah, you have to take it seriously. I work my way through. I don't know if you've got that book. There's a book called Star Trek 101 that just has a little synopsis of every episode of every series. And I didn't want to like miss anything. So I just went through sort of scanning down the pages, checking that I hadn't kind of, you know, discounted some really good suggestion. Then, you know, I've got a sheet in front of me with about eight shortlisted episodes for each one of these characters, and then you know, gradually managed to whittle it down to one each. But it's definitely a challenge, but good fun.
I appreciate that, guys. I do have that book. It's an awesome book, and if you think Star Trek 101 is not for you because maybe you're an expert or super deep into it, it is for beginners and for experts, because it is a really great quick resource. for everything. So love that book and loved having you guys on. Really appreciate that. Sorry about all the homework. That's what we do at Trek Ranks.
That's okay. But, that's fair enough.
But it's fun homework.
Not exactly hard.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, I just want to thank everyone for engaging with us again here on episode 23 of the Trek Ranks podcast. As always, just want to close by saying I'm looking forward to standing with you again here in this place where I belong.
Admiral, there'll be whales here.
Well done, Mr. Scott. How soon can we be ready for warp speed?
Full power now, sir.
Hi there, thanks again for listening. If you're cruising the galaxy looking for even more Trek talk, why not visit our good friends Bill and Dan over at TrekGeeks.com? They've got a great podcast that covers a wide range of Star Trek topics, so you're sure to find something you'll love. And if you're in the mood for some awesome tunes, then you really need to head over to 5YearMission.net. The guys are writing a song for every episode of the original series, and each one is absolutely brilliant. So that's TrekGeeks.com and 5YearMission.net. Check them out today.